Hello, witches. This is Kara Kovacs, and this is Business Witch. As a third-generation witch, at least, and a business and life coach for mission-driven entrepreneurs and leaders, I teach you how to make money and magic as liberatory practices. Because when we know, seek, and embrace our full potential, we create a better world for everyone. Here you'll find tools, conversations, spells, and inspiration that take you from waiting to creating so you can build the business and life you're oh so worthy and capable of having. Let's go. Hello, soulpreneur. I have another incredible free masterclass series coming your way. Over the course of 3 days, you can attend Soulful Scaling for feminist coaches and healers who want to reach six figures ethically. No burnout, no gimmicks. I am so excited because in this series, you are going to learn the mindset that's keeping you stuck at inconsistent income, what thoughts, beliefs, practices, and rituals will help you promote the parts of the business that you most need to succeed. The simple solutions to optimizing your business practices, the ethical business sales and marketing techniques that have helped me sell over $1 million in one-on-one coaching with sliding scale, low and high ticket offers, how to leverage your business as an extension of your activism, the secret to embodying that your success is a gift to the world and don't you forget it, and how investing in your community is key to sustainable income and long-term success. We're going to be meeting in the Zoom room, 3 90-minute workshops, opportunities for live coaching with me, and the opportunity to learn more about Business Witch, the course, the program that goes with this podcast. You want to learn about Business Witch. It is going to revolutionize your business. So you can sign up at the link that is in the show notes, or you can head to karakovacs.com/links, and Soulful Scaling will be that first link that you see straight at the top. I cannot wait to see you inside. If you have never taken a masterclass series with me before, I am super excited for you. We have so much fun. See you there.
Hello, witches. We are back with another incredible guest for you today. I know that you're going to leave inspired by her wisdom. Sonali Fisk is a producer of BIPOC events and TEDx events, a leadership consultant, and I know that she has so much juicy information to share with us today. Sonali, tell the people about the work you do in the world.
Hi, Kara. Thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to see you again. Because I saw you at my TEDx event in December, right?
Yes. So we met at Trudy's meet and greet in like San Diego over a year ago.
Gosh, your memory is so good. Either that or my memory is so poor. I don't know what, but oh man, thank you for taking me back to that. Yeah. So much has happened in our world, in our lives since, you know, in the last 6 months. But thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. There's a lot happening internally and externally, you know. It's been a joy doing this work. I've been doing this consulting work and coaching work for Black, Indigenous, women-identifying folks of color for about 8 years now. And it's been deeply fulfilling, deeply joyful. There's enormous, inexplicable gratitude that comes with completed a project around our identities or our stories. And Kara, it's deeply satisfying to watch these incredible Black, Indigenous women of color go out and do the damn thing that they set out to do, right? Like, Sonali, I want to give a TED Talk. I'm like, okay, but I want it to be revolutionary and I want it to go viral and I want it to honor my ancestors. And here's how I want to do it. Or I have a vulnerable part of my racialized story that I don't know how to share. Or how do I honor myself while keeping my boundaries around my sharing? Or I have some trauma around this and I don't really want to say this thing. So how do I, you know, give testimony and still protect my innocence or my childhood? So it's a lot, Kara, and it's deeply satisfying, like I said, to watch these incredible women go out and actually do it.
Yes.
Having said that, Kara, it also comes with enormous emotional labor. It comes with enormous grief and rage and having of seeing Black women constantly being, you know, minimized or sidelined, of still, you know, up until 2023, an Indigenous woman had never appeared on a Sunday morning talk show or in the network news until Lily Gladstone gave an Oscar nominating performance in Killers of the Flower Moon. Things are changing, but there's a lot of racialized harm that we have to move through. So while there's joy and gratitude and celebration and satisfaction, on the flip side of that, there's also enormous rage and sadness to contend with, you know?
Yeah. What I'm realizing as you're saying this is I didn't tell you that you are single-handedly responsible for all the podcast guests on this show for the months of March and April, because every single person who spoke at TEDx Delthorne, I was like, do you want to come be a guest on the show? So Wiz was on the show, Amelia was on the show, Neha was on the show, Minadichi was on the show. So I just want to say thank you to you for giving this show so many incredible guests.
I'm so happy to hear that. Look at how we're connected, our circuitous relationships are, and how this is how it happens. You know, you meet people and you go, I love that. That's very cool.
But it's a testament, though, to the power of your work, because when you're talking about helping people steward their stories, I would say, like, you know, the day that you produce, there's something like 10 talks. I'm probably getting the number wrong, but that's not really the point. It's like I was captivated from the second that I sat down until the second that I left, and I didn't want it to be over, and it was 5 hours. And it creates the opportunity for people to share in that way, but also for everyone in the room to also be impacted that way, I think is really a testament to the power of what it is that you do.
Thank you so much for reflecting that back to me, Kara, because, you know, you put out an event. It's an enormous amount of work, but you don't always get to hear back, you know, how it landed for people. So thank you so much. And it truly is an honor, and it's a sacred experience for me, you know, producing these events, because we're speaking oftentimes from our lived experience. It's not theoretical. It's not in our imagination. It's literally these stories you're hearing and bearing witness to are anecdotes and stories that actually happened in people's lives. So, you know, it's an enormous responsibility.
Yeah.
So thank you, Kim.
I'd love to hear, and I think you're almost touching on it already, about something in the power of a story when it is so deeply personal, and that the vulnerability is maybe what makes it as powerful and as captivating as it is. And I know I told you before we got on that, like, on the vision board of every single client I've ever had is to book a TEDx. And I'd love to hear, in your words, how to find the subject matter that will resonate deeply with an audience, and maybe some of the process you have to go through to be courageous enough to tell a story like that.
Ooh.
I know, it's a big question.
I love the question, huh? Well, I got answers for you. It's, first of all, like, props to people who say, I want to give a TED Talk. That in itself is a courageous act, a bold act, you know, to speak to that part of yourself that has been lying dormant for a while, or comes from trauma or some kind of racialized or gender harm. You know, these are the talks that tend to go viral, that tend to be heard and reshared and retweeted. And we're not saying tweeted anymore, right? Re-X? I don't know. But there's an enormous amount of courage that you have to embody in order to say, I want to give a TED Talk. And a lot, oftentimes what I find, Kara, is that's where most people are at. Oh my God, I have to do this. I have to share this. I have to give this talk and allow people to bear witness to it. And then they come to me and say, Sonali, you know, oh my God, I said yes to this, but I am so scared. What the hell was I thinking? And right, we always say yes because our body is responding to it. We want to say a hell yes because intrinsically we know I have to do this. And then come the nerves and the butterflies and the self-doubt, right? So that's my secret sauce in helping you get clear what that is for you, because they come to me with a big idea.
Yeah.
Or they want to honor their entire ancestry or their lineage front to back. And like, Sonali, I don't know what part of my story needs to be heard. And that's why you can't do this in a vacuum, right, Kara?
Yeah.
a lot of times when you're alone in a dark room trying to figure this out by yourself, that's when it gets pushed to the back, or the fear arises, or the voice of fear becomes stronger. So that's why you got to do it with a friend or a colleague or a coach, somebody who will hold you accountable and say, you said you're going to do this. Here's how, you know? And that's what I love to do, to see people come in with this bold, badass idea or thought. Like, can I give a TED Talk? Wait, me? Really? Yes. And then look back on it 6 months from now and go, oh my God, I did the damn thing, you know? Mm. So I've done that for now 47 women, I think.
Wow.
It feels good, Kara. It feels so good. And I've given a TED Talk myself, so I understand the enormous encouragement and bravado and truth that you feel from having gotten off that stage.
Yeah.
Knowing that it's going to stand as a part of your legacy long after you've left the stage, long after you've left the planet. It's going to be a curriculum for your descendants and young, you know, women and girls coming after you. So it is a big responsibility, but it is also an honor and a joy to do it, you know?
Yeah. The way that you described it sounds like a somatic experience, like a calling that comes from a place that is not the mind. That's the way that you described it. And then you went on to talk about the yes as also a deeply somatic experience. And the way that I teach selling is through somatics. Like in coaching, they give people like sales scripts to sell stuff. And I focus on like, if you're anxious that you're manipulating somebody, that's the sales call that you're having. You're not having a call rooted in what's the possibility of us working together. Like you feel manipulative. So the person on the other end feels something is off. So I just really appreciated that the way you spoke to it first was through a somatic lens, because that's so integral to my own work. But I'd love to hear, and I know it's unique for everybody, right? But what was it like for you? Like, if you can remember your calling.
Yes.
What was that experience like?
Thank you for asking that. And I totally agree with you on the somatic experience or acknowledgement first. It's an often times like that, a hell yes. And then, oh my God, what have I got myself into? But it's coming from a deeper place that we can't always name or place. For me, it was exactly like that, Kara. It came from a place of rage, actually. Rage is a powerful form of expression and emotion, and it should not be sidelined or ignored. A lot of the Black and Brown folks I work with are coming to me from that place of rage and deep sorrow. And how do you alchemize that into a story, to a talk, into a book? And that's what I do. And so I decided to take my rage and put it into this TED Talk, Kara, because I was seeing a certain type of woman constantly being celebrated and getting the speaking and collaborative and creative opportunities, constantly getting paid more than the rest of us. And I'm talking about the white, able-bodied, cute woman, you know? It just was causing me, bubbling up so much angst in me. And I knew I had to speak to that. So my talk was about asking the dominant race to activate their sacred listening to the stories that need to be heard and told. And I had struggled, Kara, for a long time to use a certain terminology in public discourse or in a conversation. I was using it privately. It was causing me so much consternation as to why I struggled with using that term publicly. And I wanted to work that through. I wanted to workshop that. And I'm talking about the term white people. The term white people was causing me so much angst. And it wasn't until I was able to use that in my TED Talk. It was actually, I think, edited out eventually. And that's okay. But I found other ways to include it in my public discourse. But because I think white folks have been the default setting on people for so long that we were not allowed to use it in a public way, you know? But it is necessary in order to talk about the racialized harm, to talk about supremacy culture, to talk about, you know, anti-racism education and training. So the TED Talk that I gave was incredibly, it just changed my life, Kara. It changed my life. Was it hard to do? Yeah, it was hard because I was working through a lot of shit, you know? My own self being seen that much. Do I really want to be seen that much? Do I really want to say these things out loud? But it gave me enormous courage to really look at honoring my soul calling, honoring my ancestry instead of what other people want to hear from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. There are so many things in what you said that I feel like we could go in so many directions. I think one place that my mind goes is the sacredness of rage and curiosity about the sacredness of rage, especially in wellness culture, where it's like you're supposed to be high vibe and the bypassing and impossibility of that in a world where to heal suffering, we must look at it, which is uncomfortable. So my mind goes in that direction. My mind goes also in the direction of using the thing that you're most afraid to talk about as a public form of alchemy and the process of that. So I don't know if either of those feel, choose your own adventure if you feel compelled to speak to one more than the other.
Nailed it. Yes. That's exactly right. You know, what is the thing you are most afraid to talk about? You know, and what do you think will happen if you share it? That's the crux of the work. You know, that's the journey I take people into. Let's get to the belly of that beast, you know? Let's out it. Let's give it a name. Let's out it. We'll call it out so that we become a little bit more, you know, greater than that fear itself. You know, these are tools and tactics that have been used against us in order to stay quiet, in order to stay, you know, smaller than we need to be. And we've got to see how that works, you know, what that operating system looks like in the world so that we can dismantle it from within ourselves first and foremost, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of actually, I had a conversation with Elizabeth D'Alto, who was a speaker at your event. And she said something to me that stuck with me, that gossip has been demonized as a way to silence women. Because gossip is actually women sharing about the experiences of harm that they have endured. And to say, like, to be a gossip is a bad thing, is a way to silence people from talking about and processing their lived experiences of harm. And that really stuck with me because I have often considered, as somebody who enjoys gossiping, and I feel ashamed admitting that. So we're also going a little bit into, like, what are you afraid to say? I enjoy gossiping. I'm from Long Island and I'm Jewish. Like, gossiping is part of our identity.
Like, I just learned something about you. You're from Long Island.
Yeah. Okay. But I think that there's something like, in that, like, what is the intention behind it? Like, are you processing sacred rage of harm that was caused to you by sharing a story of somebody who did something that you don't know what to make of it in your lived experience unless you talk about it with somebody?
Yeah.
And that is very different from, I'm sharing a story that isn't my own for the sake of passing it on to somebody else.
Yes. We need spaces where we can get real with our own truth, you know? How have I caused harm in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What does this look like when we're in community versus how it's being fed in how the narrative is being fed through the media?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We need opportunities to unpack those things. Yes. And this is what you're doing with your show, I think, is a wonderful way you're doing that, Kara, you know? You're creating the opportunity for these conversations to happen. So, you know, good on you for that, you know.
It's so fun having it.
I wish that my, with that.
It's so fun. I enjoy it.
It's like my mother, my grandmother, they didn't have this opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Imagine what they could have said and done if they had a talk show or podcast.
You know, I had my mom on the podcast. So for those of you out there with public speaking platforms, maybe you have your mother on your show.
Yes, please. Can you, please? My mother would never say yes to it because she's, you know, a very quiet, you know, person and very reserved in that sense. But most Sri Lankans are, actually, I think. But what a wonderful thing to do. Like, I wonder oftentimes what my grandmother would have said and done if she had the opportunity to, you know, to stop and share her truth and her story. Like, I'm almost want to cry when I think about that, because they didn't have the extent of choice and the access that you and I do, just to start a YouTube channel whenever we feel like it, or, oh, I'm going to put on a TEDx event, or, oh, let me start a podcast. Like, look at the access and ability we have to just literally say what we want to say.
Yeah. You speak actually on your website about creating equitable collaborative opportunities. And what I was thinking when you were saying that is that this is the first time in human history where someone can decide to create a platform without going through a middleman of like an agent who's picking who's in Hollywood, or like who gets voted into political office. And the white dominant culture and supremacy culture has controlled the narrative by the nature of how media is created. Before we had social media, where somebody could be like, my YouTube channel, and this is like the YouTubes I watch while I'm on my lunch break or whatever, is people like self-taping themselves in Trader Joe's. And that there's something about peering into the realities of people who would have not been shown.
Yeah.
And content that would have never been produced that is like so comforting and affirming and humanizing, and a way in which we can create more equity because it's self-directed. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on creating equitable opportunities in the time that we're living in the landscape that we're living in the industries that you and I participate in or adjacent in.
Yes, Kara. What I think about first and foremost is that it is an enormous responsibility to take people on that journey, right? It's also an enormous act of generosity, because you're platforming other people. You're giving them an opportunity to be heard, to be witnessed, you know, to bear witness to their stories and the pain and the sorrow of their journeys, right? To hear their anecdotes and empathize and grow our empathy muscle in that sense without making it about me, right? To listen, to activate our sacred listening, where we're listening till the end, where we're listening without making it about you or me. And I think that's an enormous act of courage and generosity that we can each embody. But I'm concerned, Kara, that it's not tethering enough, meaning we're listening on the go, we're listening while we're jogging, we're listening while we're cooking, we're listening while we're driving. Like, are we listening? Yeah, I know you spoke to the equitable opportunities. From that standpoint, I'm very grateful for the democratic nature of it, that we have the ability to start something, you know, take a seed of an idea and germinate it ourselves. In that respect, wow, how lucky we are to be a part of this era and a part of this time, that I can write an op-ed and publish it and or start a blog or reach out to a reporter in my city desk and say, hey, I got a story for you. You need to hear this. You know, we can bypass the gatekeeper, so to speak, now, you know. But again, it has to come with a sense of duty and a sense of responsibility. And also, it's a sacred act too, Kara. As you know, I have my own radio show. We have just moved to iHeartRadio, so it's a big deal.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My show is called Revolutionary Voices, and I platform activists and artists in the social justice spaces. But it comes with it. I'm very particular about who I have on that show, who I choose to platform, you know? So we need to take a beat and think about that, you know? What are we imbibing? What are we consuming through, whether that is the food we eat or the books that we read or the shows that we listen to? Because we really do have the ability to get up and start anything we want, but it has to come with a specific intention and care, right? But yes, hell yes, to bypassing the gatekeeper, to, you know, not having to wait until somebody taps you or I on the shoulder to, you know, for an opportunity or collaboration effort, right? Like, that era is over, right? We don't have to sit around and wait to give a TED talk or start our own show.
Yeah.
Or, you know, join an open mic or write a book. We can do that at any moment. So let's do that. You know, let's be who we are fully. Right?
Yeah. You're hitting on something that feels very emotional. It's like the midpoint between believing that you have something valuable to say and taking the responsibility of saying it seriously, like to be doing both things at the same time. Like, my ideas are important. They need to be shared. But am I doing the work that I need to be doing to protect communities that might be impacted with how I share?
That's right.
You know, like I mentioned to you before coming on the show, like I have never been called a self-hating Jew more than I have in the last 6 months, mostly by members of my own family.
Oh, sorry.
Which I'm giggling because it's like, to minimize the impact of just saying it, it's fine. But to speak publicly on my platform as a Jewish person, knowing that I'm going to my grandpa's 96th birthday party on Sunday, curious what kind of conversations will be happening, you know?
No.
To think about the implications of like speaking about my experience on Birthright, which was like a nationalist brainwashing experience that I had when I was 19 years old, and to be public about that, and to think about the impact it will have on the conversations that I'm having in my immediate family and people in my audience who maybe have a different experience than I do, who might leave because of what I say. And that I feel like talking about what happened when I got off the plane there is actually like really valuable perspective to get from somebody right now. And there is an impact of naming that.
Yeah.
And I think for anybody who is afraid of being seen, what is underneath that is the responsibility of ownership of what it is they do with that spotlight.
Yes. There is an ownership of responsibility. You nailed it, Kara. And also, our descendants are watching, right? Are you on the right side of history? It's important to ask those, to self-inquire before you hit the record button, you know? Where do you stand in this, on this issue is one question. But, you know, long after you left, your descendants, the people coming after you, are going to give witness to your interview or your story or your message, and they're going to learn, and they're going to either feel shame or they're going to feel celebration and honor you. So it's important that we think about what we're sharing and saying in terms of longevity, right? That this isn't an event-based, incident-based issues that we're dealing with. This is about longevity. Where do we see ourselves 10 years from now or 100 years from now? This is important.
Yeah.
These stories, these interviews, these episodes are going to be there for generations.
Mm.
You know, think generationally. Think in terms of, right, our grandchildren's grandchildren. That's important. How I want my son, everything I do, Kara, is with that lens. You know, I have a 20-year-old son. One day he might come across an interview mom gave on Kara Kovacs' show. Is he going to, you know, is he going to feel pride and goodness in what he heard, right? And how she bore witness to her journey. Was she courageous? Was she brave? Was she kind? This is important that we, you know, honor that part of our journey, you know, the journey that is about to happen, that we know will happen, that we may not be around to witness.
Thank you for sharing that. I have a couple of questions that are a slight subject deviation, but I want to make sure that we get to them. The first of which is, somebody told me you were an Olympian, and I'm like, what sport? Like, what was that like? Tell us more.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I should explain because that's not exactly, it's not exactly 100% true. I'll explain. Oh my God. This is going back 100 years, by the way. I'm a lot older than I look. But when I was a teenager, I qualified to represent, you're going to find this interesting. I qualified to represent Sri Lanka. That's my birthland, which I also call my motherland, to represent Sri Lanka in the Seoul Olympics. That's 1980. And I was so thrilled. Oh my God. I was, you know, it was like one of the greatest moments of my life. Like, what? I don't think I understood the gravity of it until a lot later, but I was, how old was I? 17, maybe? Yeah. But my parents had to sign off on it because I was a minor. And my dad said no. And because, here's why. We were part of a non-denominational church that observed the seventh-day Sabbath. And the belief within the church was that you are not allowed to work or go to school or do any of the laborious things that you usually do on the seventh day Sabbath. So all of the meets were on Saturdays. The trainings are on Saturdays, and I would have had to run on Saturday. Boy, that was painful. I know it's a heartbreak. It's not a fun story, you know? But and I held that heartbreak and that anger for so long. But now, in retrospect, thank God, because honestly, that was not my journey. That was not where I was supposed to be. But you know, you're a teenager, so of course you're going to hate your parents for it.
Yeah, I was like imagining the teenage anger.
Oh my God.
Like the defiance of a 17-year-old of like, I qualified for the Olympics and you're not going to let me go do the, yeah.
Exactly. So I should back up. So I'm not actually an Olympian, but I qualified to, you know, to be an Olympian.
Well, I had to ask you about it because my best friend, who if people go back to the episodes from November, they can listen to Sarah Denari's episode. But I said that I was having you on the show because she's in your program, Revolutionaries Take the Mic. And she was like, did you know that she was an Olympian? So I had to ask.
Oh, Sarah, I love her. Isn't she a badass?
She is.
Oh, she's so cool. And just an angel.
She really, really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if people want to hear from her more, they can go listen to that episode because it's a great episode. I love that episode.
I want to hear it too.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. And then she also texted us a question. So I'm going to open it so that we can ask her question while we're on the subject of her. Oh, she sent me another one. Okay. We have two questions from Sarah.
Oh, my.
Is there a practice you recommend for people on a self-discovery journey that stood out to you in yours?
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, the first thing that comes to me, thank you, Sarah, for the question. There are, I believe in rituals and practices, right? Embedded into our daily lives is critical for the dreams that we are embedding into our lives, to the dreams that we foresee for ourselves and our communities. One of the practices that I find necessary, Kara, is having the ability to go back to your motherland or your homeland. I just got back from my homeland, Sri Lanka, where I was able to bury my feet into the soil and the sand and the dirt and stand before the Indian Ocean and ask her to heal me, you know, and to listen, to truly quiet the mind and listen to my next move. And boy, what I heard was instructional, was clear. I have more clarity now than I've ever had in the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm very grateful for the motherland. But here's the truth, Kara. Not everybody has the ability or the means to travel back to their homeland. You know, there are friends and colleagues I know who don't know the origin, their origin story. So what do you do? Wonderful, beautiful. Here's what I'd like to share and answer Sarah's question specifically. A beautiful elder of the Achaman Nation, of the Achaman people, of the land that I occupy here in Orange County, Adelia Sandoval, she told me, what you do is you ritually go and find a tree. It can be a female tree or a male tree. Yes, trees are gendered. And make it your own tree. And then she said, you place your back against the tree and you breathe. You practice your breathing. And you close your eyes and you allow yourself to journey with Mother Tree or Father Tree. And it sounds kind of woo-woo and might be wild for some people to hear that, but it's an actual practice rooted in African-American spiritualism and indigenous, you know, medicine. It works and it allows you to journey through the root system. It allows you to journey to parts of yourself that you may not have worked through yet or to your origin story. And it's a beautiful practice and it's, you know, been done for hundreds and hundreds of years. And it's something I use as well when I go to the canyon here. There is a specific tree I have and I observe that. And it's the most beautiful experience of my life to do it. You know, we can have that access. We can do that whenever we want to.
I have to tell you. So another one of our connections, Amelia Butler, was on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I shared with her that I have a tree. His name is Oliver. He's around the corner. And I got so embarrassed.
His name is Oliver.
He told me his name was Oliver. But I got so embarrassed because she was talking about this. And I was like, I go do that with my friend Oliver around the order. And now we're, and you said, like, it sounds a little woo. And on that episode, I was like, I can't believe I'm like sharing my like special tree relationship that I have on the show.
I swear, women, those of us who identify as women, this is what I find that is common among us, you know, is we trust in our rituals. We trust in our practices that are rooted in our spiritualism or rooted in our intuition. No, and I want to be able to speak to that in a way that isn't diminishing anymore, you know, where we're talking about it kind of curled up in a, we're kind of half embarrassed, right?
Yeah, like making fun of something that when we're in the practice of it privately is so sacred.
So sacred, Kara. And let us find the courage and the means and the ability to speak more to that, you know, to really beautify and heal our planet with these practices that we've learned from other Indigenous folks and from Black folks who often are, you know, rooted in these practices, you know, like the conjurings, you know, how from African-American spiritualism uses this conjuring method. Like these are still spoken of in a quiet tone, you know, because the patriarchy is loud, I guess. I don't know, but
yeah.
Look at you. You're allowing us to bring that to the forefront. So,
I mean, that's how this podcast is called Business Witch, which I've thought like, oh, is that going to be like off-putting for people who might have joined my audience, but they read that word and they didn't think that it applied to them. So they just didn't bother reading the rest of it. I've had that conversation with Trudy in coaching and like Trudy LeBron for people who are like, who are you talking about? I'm always talking about Trudy. Anyway, I've thought about that. And there have been ways in which I've rebranded some of my content to be accessible to a larger audience. But this podcast is about the people that I have on it and the ideas that I want to share. And when I think about the word witch, the reason that I think it makes people uncomfortable is if you think about colonization and the idea and sovereignty, like the idea that the British Empire or any empire has been like, God hath giveth me the power to be the head of this land, like this presumed supposed power, or like I accidentally crashed my boat into this land, so God must want me to own it. And then you think about what witchcraft has been, which is like people, you know, walking around a fire, embodying the energy of the fire and like letting energy move through them and like actually embodying and experiencing and manipulating power that you can't necessarily see, but you can absolutely feel in a way that would be terrifying to someone who has built an entire empire on this presupposed divine power like construct. Of course, people think witchcraft is scary. It, like the patriarchy had to make that demonic.
It was designed that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, this podcast is just going to be continued to be called Business Witch.
You keep going, okay, Kara? 100%. It'll be an honor to share this episode to say I was on Kara Kovacs' Business Witch podcast. Okay.
I like think that everybody can access their inner witch. We had Kate Ballou on the podcast who was talking about how to access your inner witch is to just access your divine power, to like trust that you are powerful in a way that you may not have been able to explain or see. And I think that that's how I would invite people to embody it. Okay. I want to make sure before we end, I ask you, if somebody wants to give a TEDx, where would you advise them to start?
Give a TED talk. Yeah. Well, the fact that you want to give a TED talk, congratulations. You got it. You could do it. You just have to put the puzzle pieces together. That's all it is. There are over 7,000 TEDx events right now, Kara, all over the world. And they're actually looking for you. They're looking for people to fill their event. So go, my recommendation, go to TED.com/TEDx/events. Okay. TED.com/TEDx/events. There you'll see the full map of all of the TEDx events around the world. Start with your geographical location and see what events are happening in your city or your township or your state, you know, or your country. Start there and then branch out. Think about your alma mater, think about your hometown, your birth town, you know, identify where you want to speak, and then start writing out your story. in free form, you know, just write it out. Take your pen and journal and just start writing. And once you see that on the page, it'll allow you to see that, oh, okay, I've got something here. I've got something to say, right? It'll give you the courage to take that next step and that next step and that next step. So those are two things you can do right now is just start journaling. Let me give you a prompt. Start with, what am I so afraid to talk about? It's a good prompt. And then this, it's a two-parter. What am I so afraid to talk about? And then once you find the answer to that, what do I think will happen if I share this? So you do that journaling part. And then the other piece to that is go to that website and see what TEDx events are around, happening around you and for you.
Those are great two tips. But I also know that you offer support for people who want to speak at TEDx. So at a TEDx event, excuse me. So if people are curious about that, maybe you'd like to let them know how they can find you and what it is that you help with.
Thank you, Kara. Oh, it would be a joy to do that. That's one of my joys. Again, is taking the seed of an idea, germinating it, and then having a whole tree for you to go deliver at a TEDx event. That's what I do. I've done that for 46 or, well, I have two more I'm working with right now, is help you from start to finish, how to write the talk, how to embody it, how to deliver it so that you're not just reciting a script, and how to pick the right TEDx event for you. That's what I'm working on. And in the spring, Kara, of every year, I make it more accessible for people who want to give a TED Talk, where the pricing is a lot more approachable than it is, because working with me privately one-on-one is an investment. But in the springtime, in March, April, I make a lot more accessible for a handful of people. So just reach out to me. I'd be happy to share a link with you where you can, where you folks in your world, Kara, who might be interested in giving a TED Talk, can reach out to me and we can have a one-on-one 30-minute chat to see where you're at. And I can help kind of mechanically break it down for you. Like, okay, you've got to talk here, or okay, here's how you can make it more revolutionary. Here's how you can make it more bold and engaging, and then help you pick out the right TEDx event. I'd be most happy to do that.
Amazing. We will put that link in the show notes. But for people listening now, if you were to send them somewhere, where can they find you?
Good question. You can go to SonaliFisk.com. That's my website, SonaliFisk.com. I'm also on Instagram as SonaliFisk.
Beautiful.
You can find me in both those places.
And then we have two questions we always ask at the end of every show when I remember to ask them. The first is, what's your sign? And if you know your sun, moon, rising, I would love to know your sun, moon, rising.
Oh my gosh. You know, I follow Chani Nicholas, and this is part's always been confusing to me, but I'm right on the cusp. Mm-hmm. I'm born on the first day of astrology, which is March 21st.
Happy birthday. We're recording this in the past.
Oh, thank you. Oh my God, a week from today. Yeah. Right. So I'm on Aries, Pisces cusp.
Okay.
And I don't know what my sun, moon, rising is. I don't even know how to figure that out, to be honest with you.
You know what time you were born.
That is the problem.
Yeah.
Because my mother, I'm the eldest of five girls, so she has to like dig deep into her archives to figure that out. But I know generally it's like 6 p.m. the evening.
That's enough. That's enough to know. And then I would say that you are probably, if it's the last day of Pisces season, but 6 p.m., you're probably in Aries.
Okay. I'm definitely inclined to agree with you. I have Piscean tendencies, very dreamy, love to write poetry, love to perform, but the Aries in me is what gets shit done, you know?
Yeah. Well, happy early birthday. And then our final question is, what's your why? Why do you do what you do?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's changed. It used to be because I'm fucking angry. You know, am I allowed to? I'm sorry. I should have asked you.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely curse. We curse. Yeah.
Okay.
That's totally fine.
One of the few pleasures in life. Come on.
Yeah. If people are put off by me cursing, they shouldn't work with me. I'm going to curse in your sessions.
Yeah. So it started out from a place of deep rage, of, you know, inequity in our country, in our world, you know, seeing people who are darker skinned being, you know, marginalized and sidestepped all the time. It was causing me deep sacred rage. But now I think I do what I do because I believe in our humanity, you know, especially with what I'm seeing and happening. Palestine has changed my world. Palestine has changed my life. See that much love coming out from a people who have been historically oppressed for so long, to see that much belief and trust in their humanity and in us, you know, they're not disheartened or they haven't given up on us or themselves. So it's my belief that together we can, you know, create the world that we so desperately need and want for each other, that we can have decolonial, free, liberated people, not just in Palestine, but for all of us. That's what keeps me going, Kara. This inexplicable, unequivocal belief that we can do this. We can work our way to our collective liberation.
We usually end here, but I have to share, based on what you said, the insight that I got from that. I told you I went to an interfaith Shabbat that was hosted by a queer Israeli man and a Palestinian woman. And I have to share what the Palestinian woman shared. She was speaking about how we need to be invested in a solution that includes peace for our own self-interests, not in protection of the other people, but that because collective liberation is a necessity, that it's actually in everybody's best interest to come up with a solution that includes peace, because there are 7 million Jews and there are 7 million Palestinians, neither of whom are going to all pack up and leave. So this idea that the only solution is to get rid of that many people is insalvageable. But what she said, this is the part that I had to share, is that it was her privilege to be able to have enough empathy to have that perspective because she wasn't in Gaza. That her ability to watch her people suffer and to be in deep grief of that, but have enough perspective to see that peace is in the own best interest of her people, is a privilege she would not expect from most Palestinians right now.
Yes. What a deep, profound, thing to say.
Yeah.
To have that much clarity around that. That is absolute truth. The enormous privilege we have to even work towards our collective liberation, to even, right? To even embrace our humanity the way that we do. That needs to be named.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That we have enough distance to be able to access empathy.
Right.
Because we are as safe as we can be in this current moment where we are. So.
Yes, we are. And everybody deserves to feel safe.
Yeah.
Everybody deserves to be protected.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep going until we achieve that together, you know?
Yes. Thank you for sharing your story and your wisdom with my community today.
Thank you, Kara, for having me. It's been a joy and an honor.